Hey there, I'm an animated Connor Walsh, which is kind of ironic because people say I'm pretty animated in real life. Anyway, welcome to Walsh Wednesday, my new slash old podcast. Let me explain. Back in high school in 2013, I was pressured by some friends to do an impromptu solo acoustic performance in my cafeteria. Believe it or not, people really took to it. And it turned into a monthly musical series I did through the rest of high school. Who said High School Musical wasn't realistic? By college, I turned Walsh Wednesday into a web series, focusing on interviews surrounding community events, charities, and local entertainment in the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions of New York. Walsh Wednesday spawned several spin-offs such as the Walsh Wednesday Concert Series, Walsh Wednesday Spotlights, and Walsh Wednesday The Reflective Series before its hiatus in 2021. After that, I spent the last 3 years working in radio, honing my craft, conducting unbelievable interviews, traveling to fascinating places, attending mind-blowing events, and meeting some of my personal heroes. Now, with the help of some awesome people I've met along the way, I'm bringing Walsh Wednesday back bigger and better than ever. Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode, we start by speaking with Rebecca Smith-Aldrich and Stephanie Wersky from the Mid-Hudson Library System in to promote the MHLS Summer Road Trip Program. After that, we speak with Hudson Valley actor Daniel Brenner about his most recent run as John the Baptist / Judas in the Center for Performing Arts at Rhinebeck's production of Godspell, along with his upcoming season with the Woodstock Playhouse Summer Theater Festival. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode for you guys. So I've had the privilege of working alongside this organization when I was at the radio station, and I'm so happy to have them back here for Walsh Wednesday now. Getting to speak with a longtime collaborator and friend, Rebecca Smith-Aldrich, who is the executive director of the Mid-Hudson Library System. And we got ourselves a new friend. We have Stephanie Wersky, the communication specialist. We're going to be getting into their road trip program that's going to be going on this summer. It's going to be a lot of fun. Not to forget, they got a new app. I have the app already. You should check it out. But before we get into all of that, Rebecca, Stephanie, how are you guys?
We're doing great, Connor. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Totally. And I see in the background, Rebecca, libraries change lives. And I think that is very effective. And I think that's very true. We'll get into many of the things. Now, Stephanie, if I'm not mistaken, is that a map behind you? Is that a map of the different libraries or what is that?
Yes, it is. That's a map of the Hudson Valley and all the places on our Hudson Valley first annual library road trip.
Fantastic. And just anybody who can see it right now can see that there are plenty of places to go visit and have a part of this road trip. Stephanie, anything about the map you want to point out?
Well, there's 70 locations, so 66 libraries in the system and 70 including different branches. So in five counties, and we want to give a shout out to Central Hudson for giving us some support on this program, as well as the Stewart's Shops, which isn't here on the map, but recently came on to help us promote. So we're excited to have them.
Fantastic. Hey, they're recent. You haven't got them on the print yet, but you will soon. But that's awesome. So, of course, let's get into what exactly the Mid-Hudson Library System is. Rebecca, you and I have talked about this on the radio station and saying how this is so different compared to just like singular libraries and especially other places around the nation. There really aren't systems like this. So, Rebecca, would you like to take this away and explain what the Mid-Hudson Library System is?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So the Mid-Hudson Library System was formed in 1959 by New York State because they had this really great idea that if we all work together, we could go further than you can if you work by yourself. So the libraries of the region, all 66 of them, actually are the originators of the Mid-Hudson Library System. So we're basically a cooperative that finds economical ways to work together while also breaking down barriers to access information, books, and the, I think, widening in terms of the complexity of the digital landscape of how we actually get to information entertainment these days. So the libraries all work together. We use some state money, we use some local money, and we find really cost-effective ways to do things that enhance the quality of life here in the Hudson Valley. And we thought the road trip would be a great way to introduce more people to what's going on at our libraries.
I think the road trip is a phenomenal idea. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Before we get into the road trip, though, I want to talk about something you just said about the digital landscape of everything that the way that everybody receives their information and entertainment. And you guys have the new app, which launched in May, you said, right? May
Yeah, May
1st.
1st.
And with the app, this goes hand in hand with the road trip because you could use the app to help you out with the road trip. There's a special thing right here. I don't know if anybody can see it. But the MHLS road trip there, you can click on it there. I'm doing a horrible job. I'm promoting this. I'm sorry.
Doing
I'm
great,
trying.
Connor.
I'm trying. I'm trying. But let's talk about the integration here with the app. You can get all the information for the road trip plus other sources here. This came out in May. How's this app doing so far? I know I'm loving it, but how's the rest of the community loving it? Either one of you guys, whoever
It
wants
took
to.
off like wildfire, which, maybe I shouldn't use that euphemism anymore, but over 100,000 folks already grabbed it and are doing searches in our catalog, which has been really exciting. So we think it's really speaking to the lifestyle that most people have, which they're living on their phones these days. They're not stopping by their PC. So, searching for stuff on the go, they know their kids got some homework. Can I look up right away? Do we have books on pirates or dinosaurs or whatever they need? We can get that to them very quickly. And because the libraries work together, you can request something to be delivered from any of those 70 locations to your local library right through your phone, which makes life a lot easier. And a lot of books you can just download right onto your phone, either as an ebook or a downloadable audiobook. There's also classes online, e-resources to learn a language, all sorts of cool stuff that now you can really just do right through your phone, which hopefully makes everyone's life a lot easier. And then the road trip button in the app, you can use that to map your route. So you can visit new libraries that you haven't been to before. So I don't know about Stephanie, but at least me, I'm a library tourist. Anytime I go on vacation, I want to go check out libraries in other parts of the country. And I think right here at home, we have so many amazing library buildings that are doing so many cool things that it's a great excuse to go visit another library in another part of the valley. And the mobile app can help you map that out so you can figure out your route.
That's incredible. And one thing I want to make sure that we highlight is truly the interconnectivity of all this. The fact that you can have this app and it connects you to the 66 libraries. And if you need something, if it's not at your location, the other libraries can help out, right? There, it's a true system, it's a true network, and everybody's really piggybacking off of each other, right?
Yeah, they share almost everything in every building with any patron from any library that comes in there. And then our physical delivery system, so we have the software that makes it all work, and then also the physical delivery system, which saves over $4.5 million a year, rather than mailing things back and forth to each other. So it's a really cost-effective way to maximize the household budget for the folks of the Hudson Valley.
No, I think that's incredible. Thank you so much, Rebecca. Stephanie, you were the one that actually first told me about the MHLS summer road trip. I got your email. Actually, it was funny because I was emailing Rebecca about something else, and then I got your thing come in. It was like, oh, perfect timing. So, Stephanie, if you could go into more about what this road trip is and what people in the Hudson Valley can expect out of it, and what can they get out of it from an informational but also entertainment standpoint.
So the road trip is going to take place from June 6th to October 18th, and it's just an invitation really for people to visit all of the libraries in the five county system, as many as they can. There'll be some souvenirs to gather along the way. So 10 libraries will get you a sticker, and then there's some additional souvenirs from there. And at the end, if we have anyone that finishes the road trip and does all 70 locations, we're giving out a special edition library card. So to commemorate the road trip and their accomplishment. And when people go to the different libraries, there are, like Rebecca was saying, so many different types of buildings, some of them historic buildings. There's different parts of different towns, obviously, that deserve to be visited for sure. And each library is very unique. They'll have different programs, they'll have different collections. Some of them have art galleries set up right within. There's programming. And so there's a lot of different things that people can access when they go to visit.
No, and I think that's really cool because here it is, it's interconnected. So if you need something, you're always connected. But it doesn't mean that every single library is just a cookie cut version of the same one that you just visited, say, a week ago or whatever. And I think that's also cool because you can plan a whole trip around it. You can go to a town that you don't typically go to. The library can just be one stop on it, or you're there. And it starts raining, and it's like, oh, we wanted to do more stuff outside. I guess we're going inside. There's air conditioning. That's great for the summer. Love all that. And talk about the programming for a second. Obviously, there's 66 libraries, 70 different buildings. I believe there's two mobile locations. You have two like mobile libraries.
Oh, two bookmobiles,
That's awesome. So, Stephanie, if you could talk to us what people can expect out of some of these programs. What are a couple examples? I'm not looking for everything, but what are some examples that people can expect with these programs?
Sure. A lot of libraries in the system have seed libraries as well. So on site, you can find some seeds for planting time. There are, like I said, a lot of art exhibits or collections that people can show that are patrons or sometimes staff that show. I know the Adrian's Library right here in Poughkeepsie always has an art exhibition going on for sure. So there's oftentimes speakers, so make sure you check out the calendars for each of the libraries and interesting programming or even online talks about different parts of the history of the Hudson Valley. So, Rebecca, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think very conveniently, this is also a time to be across what we call the summer reading program, which is a way to entice kids and adults to read over the summertime and maybe just chill out, relax, explore things that you want to know about and learn more about. So that will be going on in all locations during the majority of the road trip over June, July, and August. Our libraries do programming specific to engaging folks with reading over the summer and particularly focus on younger folks so they get to pick what they're reading instead of being told what to read like they are during the school year. So that's wildly popular across the system. And hopefully, we'll give parents maybe a little reprieve. They could actually get something out of the visits to the library as well if they're borrowing books or checking out other cool aspects of the library facility, whether it's the Library of Things, like Stephanie was just saying, the Seed Library. Other libraries are lending all sorts of interesting stuff from gardening tools to pressure washers to all sorts of kind of unexpected things these days. So I think it should be interesting for people of all ages. And really, our library's program. Programs are for people of all ages, so that matches up nicely. We also are seeing a huge increase in the number of libraries that are doing programming that get people connected with the outdoors. So we're seeing more walking clubs, bird watching groups, all sorts of things that help people connect with nature and get outside, led by library staff or by partners that the libraries are bringing in to help out with those outdoor programs.
That's really cool. I love this 360 approach of looking at it, and it's more than just being inside a library, the fact that you also have the outdoor activities as well. I just love this entire concept. And I'll admit, when I was younger, I didn't appreciate libraries enough. Now that I'm in my mid to late 20s, I'm enjoying it so much more, and I find like it's a good way to ground myself. And I want to get into that in a little bit, actually. But before I get into that, let's talk about some of the reasons why you guys are doing this road trip. We're talking about what people can get out of it. They can get a lot. But from the Mid-Hudson Library System side, what was the incentive for you guys to start this summer road trip? And what kind of goals are you hoping to have with this throughout the summer into the fall?
There's a number of reasons we picked up on this, but one was our board of trustees, which is made up of 15 folks who volunteer from around the five counties. They pointed out a couple of years ago that not many people know about the Mid-Hudson Library System. They know about their local library and where they go, and we're kind of behind the scenes helping make things happen and make them affordable, but people don't really know us, which can be an issue sometimes when we're talking to legislators and other funders who really have the lifeblood of the system in their hands making decisions about our funding. So this was one of the first reasons we looked at the program, was to help people understand this is a whole system of libraries that are working together and help people see a little behind the scenes of how we make that possible. But our biggest driving goal is the engagement with local libraries, for people to understand that your local library is not what it was 25, 30 years ago. And it's really, I think, one of the coolest opportunities in town to engage with your neighbors, to learn things you're interested in, to connect with technology, which we're finding is something that we've got a lot of the older folks in the Hudson Valley seeking help. Either they didn't grow up with computers, they're not quite sure what they're seeing online, they're worried about getting, taken in by a scam. There's more and more misinformation, disinformation, and they're just trying to figure out how to navigate all of that. And our library workers are really well trusted on that front. We have a whole program called the Digital Navigators Program that helps anyone who comes to the door of a library figure out their device, what they're looking at online, how to know if they should click on this link or not. So I think libraries today have a lot not only to surprise folks, but really meet their needs where they are today. And a lot of people just don't think of libraries beyond books. So we really want to expose folks to how many cool things are going on, but also just how practically helpful the libraries are and how economically sound they are in every little community across the Hudson Valley. And I really do feel like, I mean, I'm biased, but I think our libraries are total treasures. Like, they are doing so many good things for so many people, and they deserve more credit for that. So we're hoping this exposes more folks to what's going on across the Hudson Valley and local libraries.
I hope it does too. I think it's a really cool program. And Stephanie, when you sent me that initial press release, it was like, oh, this is interesting. I can imagine a number of people and a lot of families getting involved on this. So, Rebecca, something that you just said, meeting people's needs. I said a moment ago how I've found, taking part in reading more and also visiting libraries as a way to decompress and disconnect in a time where we're constantly looking at screens. We're looking at screens right now because we're all in different locations. It was harder to get together. But as much as there is a benefit to the online and you guys are embracing that, there's also this need of disconnecting. There's a big trend right now that a lot of people are kind of moving backwards, getting flip phones instead of the smartphones, that they are focusing more on radio, focusing more on books, trying to get away from that, not because it's they can't afford it, not because there's not the accessibility to it, but because everything is too overwhelming. I would love to hear from both of you on this. In a world where everybody's essentially just screaming all the time, how is the Mid-Hudson Library System that perfect little whisper to help bring people that back down to earth?
I love you, Connor. What an excellent question. Because this is, I really mean that, Connor. I mean, last week I was at the Maine Library Association. They invited me up to talk about why libraries, what we're going to look like in the future, why we're important to people in their lives right now. And really, what I spent my whole time talking about was something that started off very sad. I warned everyone I was going to bum them out at the beginning, which was the U.S. Surgeon General's report from 2023 that called out the epidemic of loneliness in our country, that people are socially isolated, they're getting sucked into their devices, they're not talking to one another. They really don't even know how to have conversations sometimes or how to make friends. And libraries are one of the few places you can go in almost every community across the country where you don't have to pay an entrance fee.
Right.
It's nonpartisan. You don't have to read a book if you don't want to. You can just come hang out. You can meet people. You could learn about something. You could just be quiet and do what you want to do that day. You could hang out and do a puzzle. Like, it's what you need. So for Harry Potter fans in your fan base, we're like the room of requirement. It's what you need in that moment, whether it's a space to be quiet, a space to meet other people, a place to really just figure out the world around you. And that's really where we try to concentrate energy, is that social cohesion that's necessary for strong communities, for people to actually know one another as neighbors and to have empathy, respect, and understanding for one another, either by learning together or seeing each other as neighbors, or having a shared experience where, I don't know, maybe you're traveling around the Hudson Valley and getting to know where you live a little better. So I think libraries are where it's at. And I know I said I was biased before, but I really do think we are what the world needs right now in terms of a place where you can go to for trusted information, a place that's nonpartisan, non-commercialized, just there to be with your neighbors or to learn on your own, whatever you're interested in, or maybe just a spot to like sit down and watch something quietly, even if it's not educational. That's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I think it is very much what people need in a number of different ways. It grounds us, it brings us back to earth. There's nothing that's being pressed on us when so much is really being pressed. It's crazy. Stephanie, do you have anything that you want to add to that? Piggyback what Rebecca was saying.
Sure, yes. As someone who originally didn't have all of the online connectivity, and I'm definitely one of those people that's reaching back towards some of this older technology. And I got a turntable with a cassette player and a CD player combo for my birthday
Nice.
recently. So I can go now and borrow CDs from the library. Yeah, it's one of those places to just always remember you can go no matter what, and it's community there, and you can do a craft project, you can, look for something special that you are interested in, and we're gonna bet you'll find the information. And shout out to all the library workers, because they are the ones that are, there every day working hard for their community, so, and giving back.
No, I think that's great. And funny with what you said with the CD player and the cassette player, I still have mine from when I was like a toddler, and it still works, and I still use it, and I love it to this day. So I'm glad that you got yours. That's actually so fun.
We were just talking, Connor, last week about how, like, I'm delaying buying a new car because I like my CD player in my car a lot.
Yes.
Right.
I will say this. One of the things that I hated the most giving up my 2003 Saturn was the fact that it had a CD player and a cassette tape player. Now, mind you, I don't have many cassettes. So I used like the cassette thing where you put it in and it just had an aux cord. So I did that. But I used the CD player all the time. So I feel you on that. I miss that with my car. I really do. Since I know you guys do have a hard cutoff time, we've gotten so much in during this time. But right now, as we wrap up this episode, I would love to hear what kind of last little nugget do both of you have in regard to the summer road trip, libraries, just the informational age that we're in. Any kind of nugget that you want to leave on right now, I would greatly appreciate it. Stephanie, you're currently on my screen. Would you like to start us off with that?
Sure. One of the things that people can do when they go on the road trip and visit each library is there's a hidden artifact in each library, which is something that has the Mid-Hudson Library Road Trip logo on it. So it's kind of like an incentive to take selfies, send us your stories about what you found interesting about that library or something fun that you did while you were in town. So we'll have those artifacts to find and selfie station. And each time you go to the library, you're going to pick up a map, the map that looks like this, but it folds down into this nice brochure so you can get all the information. Get them, each box will get stamped by your
Wow.
librarian. And then you'll pick up your souvenirs along the way, as I said, and people can go to midhudson.org/roadtrip.
That's awesome. That's a great scavenger hunt right there. That's cool for anybody of any age. I could see families just eating that up. It's so cool. Rebecca, what would be your last little nugget for this episode?
I would say that, the Hudson Valley is an amazing place to live. I've lived here my entire life, save a little jaunt to go to college. And it's just such a beautiful place with so much history, tons of stuff to do outside and in. Support your local library, support your local businesses, support your local artists. This is what we're all about. We think the key to success here in the Hudson Valley is that local supports local. And this is a great excuse to get out there and learn more about the place you live.
I think that's a great way to sum it all up. Of course, again, you can find all the links and information in the description of this episode. So you can find the website, you can find the new app, you can download it just like I did, and you can get in on this summer road trip program. Rebecca, Stephanie, thank you so much for being here on this episode of Walsh Wednesday.
Absolutely. Thank you, Connor.
I'm Connor.
I'm Stephanie.
I'm Rebecca.
And as always, we're glad we get to
Spend
spend
some time.
time. I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors.
Baseball has umps, you idiot.
I don't have an umpire outfit, okay? Sue me. Hey there, I'm the ad ref, calling a timeout on this week's episode to tell you about our sponsors. Next up to the plate, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications. Philomena?
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit PRwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday. Now back to you, AdRef.
Thanks, Philomena. That's enough out of me. Play ball. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode lined up for you guys today. So I worked with this actor back when we did Rocky Horror Picture Show. That was part of Core Theater Group. You've seen Paul and Chuck on, so kind of bringing it all together. He just finished a run as John the Baptist / Judas in Godspell at the Center for Performing Arts in Rhinebeck, and he's just about to get things going for Woodstock Playhouse's Summer Theater Festival, doing a number of shows. We'll get into that. He also just got his BM in vocal performance at the University of Delaware. Maybe not just, but fairly recently. We have a lot to talk about here, and I'm really excited to have him on. With us, we have Daniel Brenner. Dan, how are you, man?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing all right. No, quite the trip up from Warwick. I hope it wasn't too bad.
I mean, it's less than the trip I've been making for the past few months.
That's fair. Yeah, having to go up and down for Rhinebeck and everything. Yeah.
So I'm used to it.
Well, that was kind of like what I was doing when we did Rocky Horror a couple years ago, how I was doing like hour and a half.
Yeah, so you know what it's like.
I know exactly what it's like. But yeah, you just finished up that run at the Center. That was your first time doing a Center show, right?
It was.
What was it like joining that Rhinebeck family there?
It was everything like I could have hoped for and more, honestly. And it's funny, there's only, out of the 17 of us in the cast, it was only me, and I only found this out like not too long ago. It was like a couple of weeks ago, I found this out. It's only me and this one other guy, Simon. That was our first show for the first time at the center. But it was so I knew no one going in. But I'm so glad that I chose to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such a great role, of course, John the Baptist / Judas. Now, just to make sure, that isn't something that the Rhinebeck Center decided. That's typically how the show goes, right? That whoever plays one plays the other, right?
Yeah, because the John the Baptist is literally only in the first scene, so they have one actor play both.
Hope it doesn't confuse too many audience members.
Yeah,
because you never change costume or anything.
Yeah, and I have only seen like a couple different versions of Godspell, so I mean I'm not 100% sure. I mean it's a show that's been adapted very widely and had a lot of different takes on it.
Yeah.
So I do know that, but I haven't seen all of them. So some people might do something slightly different with it.
Yeah. No, understandable. So taking on a role like this, these both are very important biblical figures. A lot of people are aware of them, of course. Obviously, kind of a 60s hippie spin on the whole show with Godspell.
Yeah.
But what was it like to take on, one, an iconic role for the sake of musical theater, but also an iconic role when it comes to just historical and religious reasons?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, I shouldn't say most, I don't know, a number of people in the cast, including our director even, don't identify as really super religious, just in general. It was our director's first show actually, and it's been one of her like
really
dream, and she did a great job. Shout out Kelsey.
Shout out to Kelsey. Yes,
but it's been a dream show of hers for a while, and I know it holds. So see, I'm like kind of a newbie to the show, honestly, prior to starting the rehearsals and stuff for this show. But it's a show that's holds a lot of importance to a lot of people, a lot of significance. I know that. And it's grown to be become very significant to me now as well. It's really like it's more about the teachings, like the messages of the teachings. That's
all the
really
parables,
the focus, and the relationship between this group of friends. Really, no one's trying to portray a historically accurate version of like you know Jesus or Judas and all the disciples. It's kind of we were all kind of just playing really like childlike versions of ourselves at times, because it's extremely campy show, one of the campiest I can think of, honestly. Now it's definitely the campiest show I've ever done, but you know, so it requires a lot of commitment to the bit, you know.
No, absolutely. And one thing that you're very good about, like obviously working with you for Rocky Horror, but then seeing you in this too. When you're in a role, you really, really lock in.
I mean, the Rocky Horror at the time was like the most like kind of out there show I'd probably done until this. In different ways, though, you know.
They're both out there in their own ways, yeah. But they're both very out there.
Rocky Horror also obviously way more adult.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Godspell is it's really for everyone. It's, you know, it's not a, even though it is like a lot of the humor is can be childish at times. It's not a children's show by any means.
Mm-mm.
But it requires such a, you know, every actor, like, you know, is on stage for basically the whole show. It's, you know, it requires everyone to be engaged like constantly. And yeah, so that's what's most challenging about it, honestly.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you ever been in a show like that where you're like constantly on stage?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, I every show that I've been in, there's always at least a scene change. So even if you're in practically every scene,
yeah,
at least you got the scene change to kind of like decompress or change costume or do something. Yeah.
We got like those, you know, squirt like water bottles that they like use for like, you know, football players.
Yeah,
we got a few of those and like threw them like behind the trunks that were on stage that we could grab sips of water if we needed to.
So you guys were just like the football teams. Did you have like an official water boy or anything?
No, unfortunately not.
Nah, didn't have Adam Sandler with that quality H2O.
Exactly.
No, that would be fun on in its own right. But that's awesome though. And you were telling me just before this that you guys were pretty much sold out majority of the weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that must be a really great feeling. Here it is, your first show part of this specific theater group. And then to have that kind of community outreach and love. What do you say to those who like came out to the show and the interaction that you had with those crowds?
Thank you. I mean, I had some really, really sweet exchanges with some complete strangers that I never met before that you know, felt, you know, an impact from the show. And that's really all you can ask for, you know, just want people to feel something.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for out of art, right? We're always looking to find that connection and to feel.
Yeah, we couldn't have ask for more. I mean, yeah, we had gotten to the point with the show where it was honestly very well. It had been very well rehearsed for a pretty long time. So we really just needed an audience at that point to complete the picture, if you will. Because without an audience, especially a show like Godspell, it's like it's really nothing more than a bunch of crazy people in a room.
It's just it brings me back to the old drama club days. That's the kind of vibe I was getting, like everybody just getting a chance to kind of almost, I know it's, there's a script and everything, but you know, there's still some improv. There's everybody's kind of being loosey goosey, as you said, exaggerated childlike versions of yourselves.
A lot of improv. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not like the best at improv by any means. I've gotten a lot better doing this for sure. Yeah. But there's some of the other actors, particularly Risa, who's wonderful.
Oh yeah. I can tell with her.
She has some of the best ad libs in the whole show. Yeah.
The guy who was playing Jesus, Jonah, just like very sweet things he would say to the audience when he would go and sit next to them or something.
Yes.
But it was like totally in character. I thought that was fantastic as well. It just made it feel very real.
And it was like stuff that he would say, you know. Like,
yeah.
You know, he made the role very much himself, and I think that paid off. Yeah.
No, that's very good. And obviously with a role like yours to have that heel turn at the end is like out of a show that is so silly. You really had one of the more dramatic and emotional parts in it. So was that a bit of kind of like a weird genre whiplash on you or emotional whiplash? Or did it feel like it worked or you were able to make it work for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I made it work. I mean, it's that I wouldn't say it was easy, though. I mean, I'm glad, you know, because I enjoyed getting that kind of best of both worlds. You know, it's... Like everyone else in the show, I, you know, had plenty of, you know, corny, campy moments.
You had a lot of fun voices at the very least.
I tried to come up with some different stuff.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. But yeah, and then at the end, it does get a bit more deep. So, you know, I wanted to kind of provide that bit of a foil as much as I could. But, you know, you can't phone it in with that kind of stuff. So, you know, I tried to act it out as truthfully as possible and like, but it's draining for sure at times, especially doing it when you've done it so many like nights in a row.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot, but it doesn't make it a bad thing.
No, absolutely. And I think that you handled the entire thing very well. I love the emotion that you brought to the role. I thought it was great. And as you said, it can be a lot. You have a lot going on this summer. You're going from this show into 4 shows this summer. And of course, with an incredible company, the Woodstock Playhouse Summer Theater Festival, you're doing 4 shows: Grease, Oklahoma, Can-Can, and Clue. You're going to be very busy this summer.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? And also, is this also, like with Rhinebeck, that being your first time, is this your first time working with Woodstock?
Yes, both.
Wow.
Yes. It's definitely going to be the most shows I've done within 2.5 months, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited. Like I said, I always like throwing myself into stuff that's new.
You and I have a kind of a connection when it comes to Grease, me being a radio host and podcast host and MC for a lot of things. You're going to be playing a host in that, Vince Fontaine. What's it like to get into that role? You excited about it?
I am. I still gotta fine tune my radio voice. Maybe I'll take some lessons from you. So you got a great radio voice.
Why, thank you.
I must say.
Why, thank you. No, just listen back to old episodes. Just figure out. But yeah. No, it's all about just kind of like, I don't know, take who you are, ham it up a little bit. But yeah. No, you definitely got the acting chops for it. But Grease, of course, great, great show. And you said you're also going to be part of the ensemble for that as well. So kind of doing double duty within that show. And then you have all the other ones, Oklahoma, Can-Can, Clue. Do you want to talk about a little bit about each and what audiences can expect out of them?
I mean, I really... There's a lot, to be honest, there's a lot of stuff I don't know about particulars, other than who I'm playing and when the shows are.
Still a lot of work to be done, right?
Yes. However, I know it's going to be a very talented group of people from all around the country coming to be in this company. Yeah, I think it'll be about 20 to 25 of us that are there for the whole summer. That's really about all I can. Oh, I can share. Not that I don't want to.
No, it's all good. It's still early in the process. But it also just goes to show you, when you get into this more professional world of it, it's not like it takes an entire season to work on something. You have to get those results very quickly. It happens in a very short amount of time.
It's true. Yeah.
Sure, I mean, you might know your role. You might learn to prep.
They send us our stuff ahead of time. Or they just did a week or so ago. But so I have to do my work right now ahead of time so that I'm prepared when I get there.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Yeah. So with, thinking of the, nothing against one versus the other, but they are kind of two different worlds. You've worked in professional theater productions and you've worked in community theater productions as well. And there is a difference in the way things work. So for anybody who's interested in trying to make that jump into the professional realm, what kind of things were like new to you or a shock to you or something you wish your younger self knew going into it?
It's not easy by any means. nothing about this field is easy, but I love it, so that's why I do it. I gotta remind myself that every day. Well, with community theater, I think everyone is doing it for fun.
Mm-hmm.
At the base level, some people like myself might be actually trying to pursue it as a career, but everyone is doing it for fun. You don't do community theater
if you don't enjoy it, right?
And that's not really answering the question, because that's not like something I wasn't expecting. But like it's a difference between community theater and professional, semi-professional theater.
Yeah.
Everyone's there because they love it, and a lot of the time that's it. That's the only reason, and that's the only reason you need. Everyone should have it in, like keep it in their life if they can, even if they're doing other stuff. I think it's great. And then with professional theater, it's mostly people that they're doing it that they love because they love it,
Yeah.
I think the tempo is definitely like the pace is a lot more intense with
absolutely
with professional, semi-professional, the turnaround's usually a lot shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. No, shorter, a lot more intensive.
Yeah.
The one thing with community theater that I've found, you can be working with some great people and doing some great things, but as you said, you're more than likely doing it on top of various other things you're doing in your life. So the whole rehearsal schedule is probably prolonged, while when you're doing it in a professional realm, it's like, all right, we got 3 weeks to put this together. Bing, 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 bing. And that's all you do for those 3 weeks. And it is intense. So of course, everything that's going to be going on this summer, the Woodstock Playhouse, people can find more information on that in the description of this episode with the website. You can get tickets. Tickets are on sale now. So
they are.
Can check out all those shows. And of course, they're classics in their own right.
Personally, I love Grease. I love Clue. I'm not as familiar with Oklahoma or Can Can, so I guess I'm going to have to come out and see what it's like then.
Yeah, it's definitely an older season, but they're all classics, so they should be loads of fun.
Yeah, fantastic. So let's bring it back a little bit then. Let's talk about your love, because as you're saying, if you're in this, whether in a community fashion, just as a hobby, or in it as a profession, you got to love it. So where did your love stem from? As I said, you recently got your degree in vocal performance at the University of Delaware. I'm sure that did a lot for you, but let's take it back. Where did this love stem from?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had an unconventional journey, like a lot of people. Nobody has the same exact journey. But I've been doing theater since like middle school. You know, I did it all up through until I graduated high school. Had a lot of fun. And in college, I actually went to college to Delaware to be a music ed major because I wanted to be a chorus teacher. And that, because they have a really good music school there, I will say. but yeah, theater wasn't really something that was in my career plans at the, like going into college. And then like a little bit after COVID when I was in college, I just decided I'd miss doing theater and performing as much. So I switched from education to performance. Unfortunately, Delaware does not have a theater or an acting major, which was unfortunate because I really didn't want to transfer schools just to get like that particular major.
But understandable.
Because I would have done that. Like I would have switched to like something like that if I could have.
Yeah.
But voice performance was like the next best thing. And it was also very easy to like
transition, probably transition credits,
and,
right?
And the credits and the requirements. So that was definitely a help. But yeah, so I'm classically trained, but like vocally, but my passions have never really lied in the classical realm. Even though I did sing opera and German lead and stuff like that, but you know, it's, you know, I was told for a while, like, you know, to like, you know, sing a lot of that stuff because my voice was suited for it, you know, well, I guess
suited for it. Trust me, I get it. Yeah, going, you know, to a music college as well.
So I was definitely like put in a couple boxes pretty early on, but I would say I've broken through those boxes pretty well. And then later, like after I switched to performance, I definitely got a more healthier balance of like as far as genres go, what I was learning, and you know, the rep I was working on.
Yeah.
And at that time when I switched, I also started doing actual shows again in college. I did Shrek. I was Farquaad.
Oh, and nice. Then, that's a fun role to play.
Yeah. And we did Company my senior year, which was another favorite of mine that I've done. Really, really cool show. I mean, especially the cast we had was great. Hard show, really hard show, but great. And then so then I graduated, and since I was like didn't have that acting kind of as a part of my college, like actual college education, I did study in Germany theater abroad during the summers.
Oh, wow!
Like when I was finishing up college, to kind of get that other side of things. Because I knew I kind of wanted to go into theater at that point.
Why Germany of all places?
That was just where the program was that I fell into. I mean, I didn't fall into it. I auditioned for it, but it was just a study, like a study abroad, not through the school I was going to, but over the summer, where they brought a bunch of students to this one like random place in Germany, and a bunch of like faculty from all over the place, and you study theater for a month.
Wow.
Yeah. And acting, and I had a really good acting teacher there. His name's Douglas Hall. He's now I think he's a theater professor at UNC Chapel Hill, I think. But yeah, he taught me a lot of things that I still hold on to and use.
That's awesome. And then also like Germany of all things, I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. I got friends who are like, oh, I'm going to study theater in the city because we're so close to the city. I'm going to do this for a summer program. No, you hopped on a plane over to Europe to do it, which is pretty big.
Oh, yeah.
What was it like from...
I also just wanted to travel, you know, so it was like an excuse to travel in college. You know?
There you go. So yeah, what was it like with the culture shift and everything into not just... to engage in that theater, but also to engage in the fact that you're not in America anymore. You actually got to see the world a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it was a big like culture shift. The way they live over there is very different in mostly a lot of good ways. They're very kind and respectful people across the board. They're very like Germans, I guess. They can be very to the point, but they're always, you know, have like very good intentions and are you know, willing to lend a hand for the most part. You know, a lot of them, like we were based in kind of a small town, and a lot of the locals didn't really speak much English. So, you know, we had to like learn like some of the basics to kind of get by, and they would help us, you know.
Nice.
So. The food there, like I'm not even a beer person, but like the beer in Germany puts all of the beer here to shame.
I'm sure.
All of it. Yeah.
Nah.
Schnitzel. Yeah.
I'm sure that was good. I don't know. I'm not a huge beer person myself. Sorry, Dutch's Beer Distributors, where I work, but you know, a lot of it seems watered down, and you kind of miss out on a lot of the taste or a lot of the hops. So when they get like a good authentic German beer from Germany, I'm sure like it's makes all the difference.
Yeah. And it's like all like everywhere you went, like it just seemed like all like the fruits and vegetables were like way like just always so fresh. I don't know why. I mean, that's, but I wasn't complaining.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. So how many summers did you do that for?
It was two.
Two summers?
Yeah, my last two summers of college. And then since then, like, you know, after I graduated, I've just been living here, you know, in the Hudson Valley, doing as much like trying to get as much theater experience as I can while I'm working on the side, you know, just trying to get more experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Now, since we did it together, I'd be remiss not to talk about it. Where did Rocky Horror fit into that timeline for you?
Yeah, that was the first show I did after college. Actually, that's where it was. Yep.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
The fact that here it is, the first one out of college, and technically it is professional theater. It was their first show, but
yeah,
it was first for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. Number of people, it was their first since the pandemic had started.
Yeah.
That was the same for me.
Yeah.
You know, for everybody running it, Jess, Pat, Paul, and Chuck, this was their first show as a company.
Yeah.
A lot of firsts. And for you, as you said, first out of college.
Yeah. And as you said, it also introduced me to Paul and Chuck and Jess, and they're all wonderful people. So I'm obviously really, really glad I got to meet them now, and I'm closer with them. So that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, the timelines of when we're recording this and when this is airing is all mixed up, but you're planning on auditioning for their next big show, right?
Yes.
For Sweeney Todd.
Yes. Hopefully.
Fantastic. Yeah. So that's going to be great. Have you had much experience much experience with Sweeney Todd before? Have you ever done it? Have you ever done solos from it? Anything along that way?
Actually, we did do like some scenes from it when I was, I think it was my freshman year of college, a long, long time ago now. We did a few workshop scenes, like, so it was not the whole show from Sweeney Todd, but yeah, I never saw the recent Broadway revival. No, I heard mixed things though.
I really liked it personally. Yeah. I will say this, the one who played Mrs. Lovett, she stole the show.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. The night that we saw her, Josh Groban was great, but like Annalee Ashford, that was her name. And if Annalee Ashford stole the show, just so over the top in all the best ways.
I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. But she's done some great work, and my girlfriend and I were both Josh Groban fans. Actually, when we got together, we both went to the same tour of his, but a couple days apart. So we had that to talk about, like on our first date, which was interesting. She saw him on a Sunday. I saw him on a Tuesday.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. What was it? He was up in Saratoga, and then I saw him in Bethel right after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good show. Good show. Yeah. If you ever get to see one of his concerts, I recommend it.
Yeah, I definitely will. I mean, I've been up to Saratoga once to SPAC.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. I haven't been to Bethel, actually.
Oh, you've never been to Bethel?
I haven't. No.
It's one of my favorite concert venues.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm only planning on going once this year, which is kind of odd for me. I go a lot. But a friend and I are going to see Weird Al.
Nice. No, he was my first concert.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God. Where and when?
It was in Pennsylvania. I want to say, like, I could be very wrong. It was in a theater in a pretty small town in Pennsylvania. It could have been Bethlehem, but I'm kind of just pulling that out of like a random part of my head that could be wrong. It was a theater.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. Yeah, this must have been 2009 to 2012.
Wow.
Ish. I don't even, I couldn't tell you exactly what year. I don't know how.
Kind of like middle school, right?
Yes, but it was my first show. Like, unless you count the Wiggles.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll say it's a concert. Like, first official concert, you know. Wiggles are great, though.
Yeah.
Actually, Wiggles I would have loved to have seen. I saw like a lot of the Sesame Street stuff growing up.
Yeah.
I had a lot of that.
Yeah.
But dude, Weird Al, that's sick.
And it was great because like he was so nice. Like afterwards, he everyone lined up like outside his tour bus, and he just sat on the stoop and waited for everyone, and took a picture and signed for everyone.
Really?
Yeah. So I got a picture with him at somewhere. I don't know where. And he signed like they were selling like collectible like trading cards with like all those different like songs and stuff on them. So he signed one of them for me.
That's so cool.
I have that framed.
Nice.
Yeah.
I doubt he'll do that at Bethel Woods. Bethel Woods, a little bit bigger than a yeah. small theater in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I've been a huge Weird Al fan for years. I remember I did eBay for a talent show in middle school one time.
Yeah.
Like everybody hears like the music come on. It's like, oh, he's doing I Want It That Way. It's like, nope, eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Good stuff. Yeah, this will be my first time seeing him.
Nice. Yeah, no, yeah. He was great. I mean it was a long time ago, but he's still getting active.
Oh yeah. He's still the king of what he does.
Yeah.
The king of comedy music, parody music.
Yeah.
Big time.
Did you see the movie?
Daniel Radcliffe?
I didn't see it.
You haven't seen
it?
It is hilarious. I really enjoyed it. I had a friend of mine who saw it, and he's like, don't waste your money. But like, he didn't quite get that it's supposed to be stupid and a farce, and like, mm-hmm. none of the information is supposed to be real.
Yeah.
Or most of it isn't. And, it does a great job of, well, one thing that Steve Carell always said about like The Office, never act like it's funny, act like you're playing it serious. They do the entire time. And just like you were saying about committing to the bit,
yeah.
they all committed to the bit, and it was a great movie. Recommend it. Highly recommend.
All right. I'll put it on the list.
Yeah. No, definitely. If you're a fan, especially the music, definitely worth the watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love all the classics. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one rides the bus. All the Michael Jackson parodies that he had. Actually, that's like a big thing in the movie. I forget, was it Eat It or Fat they were saying? But in the movie, he comes up with either one of them, one of the Michael Jackson songs, and then Michael Jackson puts out the real version before he could put out his parody. And he's like, everybody's going to think that I'm parodying him. No.
Well.
No, which actually is a funny plot point in the film. Yeah. Again, totally recommend it. Gosh, my first concert, REO Speedwagon, Journey, and Styx at the MVP Arena up in Albany when it was still the Pepsi Arena. I was like 3 years old.
Nice. I've never been there.
I fell asleep during it, I was told. I don't remember much from it. I was three.
Yeah, as expected.
I've seen a lot of good stuff there at the MVP Arena, though. Yeah. That's another good spot.
Have you been to anywhere in Woodstock? They have a couple of good venues there. They're smaller venues.
Yeah. I'm probably screwing this up. Bearsville isn't directly in. It's right outside, right?
I haven't been to that one, but I thought it was in.
It might be directly in. I don't know. It just goes to show you how often I'm over there. Yeah. But that would probably be like one of the main ones, yeah. I'd say.
There's this really cool venue. I just recently saw a concert there. MJ Lenderman, you know
him? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a place called Leave on Helm Studios.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Have you been there?
Been meaning to. Yeah. I've actually worked with Amy Helm in the past.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, no, she, when I was doing work up in Albany, she was doing a concert, and that was when I was working in hospitality and sound at the time. Sweetest person. Amy was fantastic, great to work with. But yeah, no, I've been meaning to get over to Leave on Helm Studios. Absolutely.
It's really cool. It's like, it's different than any venue I've been to, honestly, because it's just so intimate. And I think it only really works with certain artists or bands. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, not every genre would work in that kind of space. But
yeah.
But it's like, for the right kind of music, it's special.
Yeah.
Because it's I want to say, no more than 200 people.
Yeah, no, it's not a big
place. Like, it's basically a big house. That's it, literally. No, like, the bathroom had a shower in it. Yes. Like, I'm so serious.
No, and I think that's great. You know how people say, like, I wish back in 2004, instead of being in first grade, I was investing in my first house.
Yeah.
My thing is, instead of being in first grade, I wish I was seeing his Midnight Rambles, like, before he passed and everything.
Uh-huh.
I would love to have been there for one of Leave on Helm's Midnight Rambles. Those are things of legends. But the fact that, you know, the property is still being used as a venue is fantastic. And I know Amy's a huge part of it, and lot of great stuff. Yeah, I gotta get my ass over there. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely recommend.
Nice. Any other places in Woodstock? Well, you're going to be in Woodstock all summer, so besides the Playhouse.
I haven't been there that many times, just like, you know, for that concert, and yeah. a couple other times I went to the Colony with my parents once last year.
Oh yeah, the Colony. I forgot about that. That's a good spot.
Yeah, we saw Ladysmith Black Mambassa.
Mm, they're like nice.
They're a West African group, vocal group.
Yeah,
it's like kind of like acapella, honestly. Basically it is acapella.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're really taking a lot of different genres. You're not just like stuck to one thing or another.
That was for my mom. They're one of her favorites.
One of her favorites.
Yeah, I wasn't too familiar with them, but they're really good. They're really good. Yeah.
So besides Weird Al, what was the stuff that you grew up on that like became the soundtrack of your life?
Honestly, my music taste has evolved so much. Like I listened to so little of the stuff I listened to a lot of growing up.
Mm, interesting.
I mean, like it was always the classics. You know, I've always listened to the Beatles. Like that's kind of stayed consistent for
pretty good
for most of my life. I would say, because like you know I was on a big hip hop kick for a while.
Okay.
You know, I really like, but I'm not as much anymore, but I still really like J. Cole, who else? Kendrick,
great lyricist. Holy crap.
Yeah. And Kid Cudi. Kid Cudi's one of my favorites.
Oh wow. That's a name I haven't heard in a second, actually.
Some great albums. Juice WRLD, rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Who was
great
it?
Great freestyler.
Yeah, I actually just watched an interview with Marshmello, how he was saying like Juice WRLD was like one of his favorite collaborations of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Said he was like one of the most talented artists that he ever worked with.
Yeah, like so much of like his songs were just off the cuff. It's crazy. Like just think about
Think of that level of improv.
Yeah,
that's somebody to look up to. Then it's like imagine like all the things just right off the cuff be able to do.
Yeah. But these days I listen to a lot, mainly a lot of indie rock and alternative rock.
Nice.
Like bands like Peach Pit, Mount Joy.
Oh, Mount Joy, yep.
Backstreet Lovers, MJ Lenderman. Mm-hmm. Just kind of got into him within the past year.
Nice.
Yeah, those are the highlights.
Yeah, it's cool the way that our music taste evolves over time and everything. Especially like... I don't know. I feel like in middle school, I felt very influenced by the people I was around, and I just happened to be listening to what everybody else was listening to.
Yeah, and, no, I definitely would agree.
And then by the time I got into high school, I felt like really, really honing in on my own musical voice and my own preferences. And I will say this, though. My dad was a huge influence on the stuff I listened to. You know, we would just traveling around. He travels a lot for work as a basketball referee and a real estate appraiser. So I'd be in the backseat with them listening to classic rock or WDST, more Woodstock references and everything, and just soaking that all in. So there are certain ones that will stay with me forever. I remember we ran into one of his coworkers at a Foreigner concert when I think I was like 10 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a comment to my dad saying it's like, is he going to be able to keep up with everything? And my dad goes like, he's the one who dragged us to this concert. He wanted it. He's got the greatest hits. He knows it all. So, which I did, and I loved it. It was a phenomenal concert. But a lot of classic rock, but then also a lot of
the Dead.
Hmm?
Dead.
Little bit of the Dead. See, Dad wasn't as big on the Dead, so I didn't really get into Grateful Dead or Dead and Company or Fish or any like the jam bands until like college.
Yeah.
Because that's where like I met all the Deadheads and the jam band freaks and everything. And speaking of jam bands, I got to work with Tim Reynolds of Dave Matthews Band.
Nice.
Yeah. Fun story on that, actually. So we were getting ready for that concert, and two of his bodyguards, and mind you, like, I'm not a tall guy by any means, but like they felt like double my height. They come up to buddy of mine and myself, and they're like, hey, Tim really likes you guys. Would you like to get high with him in the dressing room before we get started? This is like a half hour before. And mind you, I don't smoke, but I'm like, why would I pass up this opportunity?
How can you say no?
So before we can take our first steps, all of a sudden, my buddy and I, we feel a hand on our collars. It was our boss. And it's like, if you want to keep this job, you're staying right here. It's like, damn it, Sean.
Wow.
You only get this opportunity once.
Oh, that's brutal.
No, so we never got to do that. But Tim Reynolds was also really cool guy to work with.
That's
he was doing one of his solo shows at the time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, my brother got me into Fish when I like right at the end of high school.
Oh, nice!
Because they're his favorite band. He's been like over 200 plus shows.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, yeah. Because like he's been
that's commitment.
He's been going to them since the 90s. I've been to like a dozen shows at this point. So I'm definitely like they're one of my favorite bands, but I don't listen to them as much like on my own time. It's more like it's like for the experience of being there at the live show. I do listen to some of their songs. They have some good songs for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the whole. I mean, it's a jam band.
Yeah, it's one of those things like you got to experience. Absolutely,
because they could just you never know how long they're gonna jam for. They'll do a 20-plus-minute song sometimes, and like. You're like, is this still the same song? Nobody knows.
No,
nope. Like, there are people that know.
Yeah, some people are really tuned in. They know that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, probably, they're like 200 times going to see. Jesus Christ, yeah. 200 times. I can't even imagine seeing somebody 200 times, yeah. Even my favorite artists.
Because no show is exactly the same with them. They have such a vast catalog. They could pull anything from anywhere. They'll be like teasing certain songs just a little bit, like during their jams.
Yep. And also, they're like one of those bands where they're not necessarily like you have to play these songs. They really just kind of do what they want.
And they've been around for so long. You know, that's one of the things with bands. It's hard to keep them together for that long. Yeah. They've been around with a short hiatus for a couple years, but so they just work so well together. You know, they're all just locked in.
Yeah.
You know, in the same space.
Jam bands are truly musicians, in my opinion. Like, I feel like you're really into music, you're in that world, you really appreciate it. And also, as the musicians themselves on stage, they're not catering to the audience, they're playing for themselves, mm-hmm. which is great. There's a huge love in that. Jesus. I don't know if I could even, like, my favorite artists, if I could go to, like, one of their shows hundreds of times. You said you've seen them a dozen times? Would that be the artist you've seen the most?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Because they do almost every year, they do a 4-night set at the Garden.
Yes.
So I've been to a lot of those. That's where I've seen them the most. And it's if there's one place to see them, it's that place.
At the Garden.
Yes. That's, and their lighting guy is like the best in the biz, I swear.
Wow.
He also is, I believe, I don't, I think it's that he also designs the house lights at the Garden. So unlike everyone else that plays at the Garden, they actually utilize the house lights like on the top of the dome as part of the light show. So
it's
like
sick.
Projecting down, as well as you got the whole lighting rig behind the bands projecting onto the crowd. You got so it's really immersive and cool.
Because
their lighting rig by itself is the coolest lighting rig I've seen out of anyone. The way it moves and changes shape, and it's crazy.
That's awesome. See, I'm just going to have to go just because of that. My cousin is a huge Fish fan, is always yelling at me. He's like, got to come with us. We go to SPAC each year.
Yeah.
They do the SPAC when they do. Yes. I think it's like typically three, maybe four nights, but at least three. They do like three nights over at SPAC too.
The lighting guy's literally like he's the forgotten member of the band, basically, because he has to be in sync with them as well, because he's like – changing everything, like everything's fluid in real time, so
it's not like it's something programmed where everybody's playing to a click and this track ends there, and which again there's a true art and a science to it, but you're right, like
it is like that with some artists. Most people use click tracks,
exactly.
Yeah
gosh, who have I seen a bunch of times? I think like Zach Brown Band is the group that I've seen the most, 6 times. So I'm at a half dozen. I need to meet you when it comes to how far you've gone with Fish and everything.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I'll see them a bunch more times, but I don't know when. It's usually always like a semi last minute decision.
That's fair. That's fair. What was it? My dad's best friend growing up saw Jimmy Buffett like 14 times. But only remembers 5. Just goes to show you they were really good times. He said to my dad one of those times, he's like, "Hey, Walshy, did I have a good time last night?" It's like, yes, you did. Great. one of those kinds of things. I feel like Deadheads, Fishheads, and Parrotheads kind of really sync well together.
Yeah.
Very similar vibes.
There's definitely a lot of crossover.
I know Jimmy Buffett's covered a lot of Grateful Dead stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he ever did any Fish before he passed, but even though he's not a jam band, plenty of crossover when it comes to audiences.
Oh, yeah.
I love the tangent that we went on. We went from talking about your theater days to everything about music. But hey, love it. Honestly, this is what it's all about, the conversation. Exactly.
It's all related.
It is all related. And even if it isn't, who cares?
Yeah.
But again, you got everything happening at the Woodstock Playhouse this summer. Of course, Greece, Oklahoma, Can-Can, Clue. If I got all the dates right, Greece is June 13th through the 29th. Then you have Oklahoma, which is July 5th through the 20th. Clue is the 25th through the 27th. That's probably the shortest run. That's only one weekend?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I guess so, if I read that right.
No, I think you're right.
And then Can-Can is then, I think I wrote down the wrong date here. I have September 1st. No, it's August 1st through 20th. It's like, nope, I'm pretty sure it's August. But that's fantastic. So, again, going back to all that stuff, what are you hoping to get out of this the most this summer?
I'm hoping to, like, make some good lasting connections for sure. It's always like it's the thing you can't put a price on is connecting with people, you know, personally and professionally.
There's,
both are valid in their own ways. Just creating new experiences, honing my crafts, obviously. It's like something like that. It kind of forces you to leave behind a lot of, like, you know, the other stuff in your life, you know, for a little bit, which could be good or bad, but like I like that kind of idea of throwing yourself into something kind of fully and
really honing in immersing.
So that, like, I always feel my most productive when I'm like really, you know, in that zone where I'm kind of focused on one particular thing.
I think that's great. So, of course, check out the Woodstock Playhouse's website. I think it's going to be a great season. I'm going to try to make as many of those shows as possible. They all sound great. Of course, man. As we're wrapping up this episode, do you have any last little nugget for the Welsh Wednesday listening audience, or do you feel talked out?
I don't know. Go support live theater, local live theater, local bands, all that stuff. They need your support.
No, big time. Yeah. And also support Welsh Wednesday, who's supporting the local arts.
And Welsh Wednesday.
And of course, but yeah, no, I think this is great. I'm really excited to see you in all these shows. I wish you the best this summer. Break a leg for all the shows. You only have two legs. You have four shows. So break one other person's set of legs then.
Exactly.
Oh, that's terrible. I should cut that. No, I shouldn't. But Dan, again, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Dan.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.